Hello and welcome to the Hayloft Hour. I am your host, Jordan, otherwise known as Spotted Bay Productions. I have been viewing the world through the ears of a horse since I was 2 years old, and this podcast is my attempt at uncovering the dark side of the equine industry. True crime, scandals, and horror stories that might otherwise stay locked away in the hayloft forever. My purpose is to make these stories well known so that we can make sure they never happen again, and to let others know who may find themselves in these situations that they are not alone. Make sure to join us on social media to follow my daily life with my two horses. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, all at Spotted Bay Productions. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen and share it with your friends. If you have an episode suggestion or a personal story you would like to submit, email it to me at spottedbay@gmail.com or submit it on spottedbay.com, but please leave out the personal info and just leave behind the juicy details. In today's episode, we will be covering the story of Farlap, a plain, gangly gelding who captured the hearts of race fans during an economic depression and had an extremely successful racing career until a sudden tragedy struck that has remained unsolved to this day. There are discussions of horse illness, firearm violence, and horse death in this episode. So please proceed with caution and feel free to skip ahead or exit the episode if a topic arises about which you are not comfortable listening, and we will catch you in the next one. All information in this podcast has been found online and compiled for your listening pleasure. Inaccuracies or out-of-date information is always a possibility. This is for educational purposes only, and everything is alleged unless proven in court. Also remember that especially with older stories like this one, a lot of the information has been passed down through the generations. I found several discrepancies between sources during my research and just chose to include what I found most frequently. A boat was prepared in the fall of 1931 with equine quarters including a stall, a small turnout, and a sand pit for rolling. Many tons of feed and forage were loaded before a plain red horse and his loving groom stepped off of the dock for a journey across the ocean. The horse and his groom sailed from Australia to New Zealand, and then to Mexico and the United States to continue a racing career that was on fire. This success ended abruptly when the groom checked on the big red horse in the early morning hours of April 5, 1932, to find him suffering from a sudden onset of illness. Intervention was attempted, but nothing could be done, and by the afternoon, the big red horse had breathed his last breath. This big red horse's name was Farlap, the Thai word for lightning. An ironic name for a horse who was a product of parents who were duds on the racetrack, in spite of their spectacular bloodlines. This horse was a dud as a colt too. He was born in New Zealand in 1926 out of entreaty by Night Raid. He was an absolutely massive red gelding that had nothing particularly special about him, just a plain red horse. The broodmare only made it through one race before breaking down, and the sire very rarely won, but did produce some successful babies. Farlap was offered in the New Zealand yearling sales in January of 1928 as lot number 41. He sold for 160 guineas to David J. Davis. If I've done my research and my math correctly, this is equivalent to about $15,000 in current US dollars. The horse was picked up by Hugh Telford, brother to up-and-coming racing trainer Harry Telford, and brought to his stable in New South Wales, Australia. Davis was a Russian-born American citizen who made a good living in Australia importing china and silver. The horse was really wanted by Harry Telford, but Telford couldn't afford him, so convinced Davis to purchase him instead. Telford felt that Farlap's bloodlines were promising, and Davis trusted his expertise and bought him sight unseen out of a catalog. Davis quickly regretted this decision, however, when he saw Farlap getting off the boat upon delivery. A gangly, ribby gelding that couldn't keep track of his own legs didn't look like a promising investment. Telford talked Davis into keeping the horse by cutting a lease deal, in which Telford would pay for Farlap's feed and entry fees and pay one-third of any winnings to Davis. This agreement was to last for 3 years. While Farlap stayed with Telford, he was looked after by his dedicated groom, Tommy Woodcock. While Farlap was generally described as being pretty boring to look at, he did have what some called the perfect hind-end conformation for racing. Even with this conformation on his side, his name turned out to be a curse since he was anything but lightning fast and consistently placed last in every single race. After a rough 2-year-old year, Farlap's 3-year-old year didn't kick off any better. He wasn't winning anything until he finally pulled off a second place win in the Chelmsford Stakes. After this win, Farlap began to mature into a real racehorse. He won his next four races in a row, even setting world records at both the AJC Derby at Randwick and the VRC Derby at Flemington. If you're curious, I did check the current records for these races, and both of Farlap's records have since been broken. In this digging, I did find out that the AJC Derby banned geldings from racing from 1932 until 1956, so Farlap got in just under the wire on that race since he was gelded. Farlap had begun to prove himself and was thus entered for the Melbourne Cup. Unfortunately, some last-minute jockey changes had to be made, which didn't bode well for Farlap, and he came in third in his next two races. He did make a comeback, however, when his usual jockey was back in his irons. They even went on to beat horses to whom they'd previously lost. One of these horses, Night March, was Farlap's elder brother by the same sire. It was around this time Farlap had been nicknamed the Red Terror, and was consistently beating his own brother to the point where Nightmarch's owner decided to send him to New Zealand and no longer race against Farlap. His winning streak continued even in the face of a failed assassination attempt. One day, when preparing for the Melbourne Stakes, Tommy Woodcock was ponying Farlap back to the stables after a workout. A car pulled up and fired a shotgun towards the group before speeding away. Fortunately, none of the people or horses involved were hurt, and Farlap went on to win the stakes that afternoon. The person who tried to shoot Farlap was never identified or caught. The lease agreement between Davis and Telford soon came to an end, and Davis agreed to instead go in as partners on owning Farlap. Telford purchased 50% ownership to Farlap for £4,000, which adjusted to 2021 value is about £290,000 or $390,000. Farlap continued to be strong through his five-year-old season, and at this point his owners decided to take him international. At the time, the richest race in the world was the Agua Caliente Handicap Race in Tijuana, Mexico. In the 1930s, the payout for this race was $100,000, which adjusted to 2021 values would be just over $1.6 million. The race started in 1917 and was run until 1934, when Mexico outlawed gambling. The race was only run two more times. Once in 1938 when it was won by Seabiscuit, and again in 1958 when it was won by Roundtable. Farlap endured an extensive journey, arriving in San Francisco, California in January of 1932, where he was prepared for the Agua Caliente Handicap, which would be run on March 20th. After this extensive journey around the world by boat, Farlap easily won the race in Tijuana. After the race, Farlap went back to California while his owners decided where they would next take his racing career. During this time, fans flocked to see the racing legend that they had come to love. Farlap was an underdog story at a time when people needed it most. He was the product of unsuccessful parents and trained by a relatively unknown trainer, and was touted as a horse with so much heart and a rags-to-riches story. The Red Terror had raced a total of 51 times in his life and won 37 of those races. The last race that Farlap would ever run would be his win in Tijuana, Mexico. On April 5, 1932, when Tommy Woodcock checked on Farlap early in the morning, Farlap was not himself. He had symptoms of colic, including fever and GI discomfort and an irregular heartbeat. A veterinarian was called and diagnosed Farlap with colic. Tommy worked hard to keep the big red horse on his feet to work him out of the colic, but by the afternoon, Farlap collapsed and with his head in Tommy's lap gave him one last nuzzle, and with the snort of blood from his nostrils, was gone. This illness onset extremely quickly and sent shockwaves around the world. It was originally reported as colic due to Farlap having grazed lush green grass. However, rumors immediately started swirling about foul play. This was the 1930s, and while a necropsy was performed, there were limited options for diagnosing what really caused Farlap's death. A necropsy showed inflammation in the GI tract, consistent with a colic diagnosis. Tommy Woodcock wasn't sure though, and insisted this had to have been a poisoning. Arsenic had been found in Farlap's body, and Tommy said that this could have been deliberately given to the horse by organized crime rings or anti-racing extremist groups. Gangster involvement was a popular theory, as some suspected the introduction of Farlap to the United States racing scene would throw a wrench in the illegal bookmaking businesses the mob was running. Another theory about the arsenic was accidental poisoning. Arsenic was used in an insecticide that had been sprayed on the trees at the farm where Farlap had stayed while in Mexico for his race. The theory seemed okay, however, it was days later when Farlap died, and I couldn't find any reports of other horses being sick that had been exposed. Even with traces of arsenic in his body, though, many veterinary experts didn't buy that Farlap had been poisoned because the levels of arsenic were not high enough to be lethal. Fortunately, we've had a lot of scientific advancements in the past several decades that allow us to continue investigating this case. Additionally, because Farlap was so well loved, his body was essentially parted out for memorialization. His skin and fur were taxidermied and are on display at the Melbourne Museum. His bones were reassembled into his skeleton and are available for viewing at Dominion Museum in Wellington, New Zealand. The big red horse's heart was double the size of an average horse heart, weighing in at 14 pounds. It was donated to the Institute of Anatomy in Canberra, Australia. Something fishy, though, is that allegedly Farlap's organs were removed post-mortem, sealed in a metal box, and buried at an undisclosed location. These organs have still never been found, and probably never will be. Because some of Farlap has been so well preserved, the opportunity to continue studying this case is available for scientists. A 2006 paper was published after investigation into this case by Associate Professor Ivan Kempson from Taiwan's Institute of Physics, Academia Sinica, and Dermot Henry from Museum Victoria. Kempson and Henry tested the levels of arsenic in Farlap's hair and concluded that an extremely high dose of arsenic was given to the horse, enough to be lethal. As I read this, though, I had to wonder what was used to taxidermy the horse and how that would affect any chemical analyses. Luckily, these scientists also had this concern, and they compared Farlap samples to other equines that had been preserved around the same time period, but were not known to have died from unknown causes or potential poisonings. It was found that the arsenic presented differently in Farlap's hair than any of the other four equine specimens sampled. The storage location and form was different in a horse that would have ingested the arsenic rather than had it applied to the fur during the taxidermy process. They also found evidence in Farlap's hide of other heavy metals like lead and mercury. While this study did support the idea that Farlap had consumed arsenic at some point, it couldn't prove for sure that it had caused his death or that he was intentionally dosed with it maliciously. Arsenic was an ingredient in a tonic commonly given to racehorses at the time, which may be a reason for the arsenic levels found in Farlap's remains. We also can't know from this data who might have done this or why. Contrary to this idea is something Tommy is quoted as saying in a 1934 newspaper interview about Farlap's death. Tommy said that a salesman sold Telford a tonic for Farlap, but Tommy didn't want to give it to the horse and would secretly dump it down the drain. If this is true or not, we'll never know, especially since Tommy died in 1936. A theory completely separate from any sort of arsenic poisoning is that Farlap died from duodenitis proximal jejunitis. This is a bacterial intestinal enteritis that normally presents with colic-like symptoms, increased heart rate, stomach perforation, and death, all of which Farlap exhibited. This is often brought on or exacerbated by stress, which Farlap certainly had between his racing career and his travels. Tangential to Farlap's travel is a theory that because Farlap was transported with his feed, that his feed may have grown mold and become toxic, ultimately leading to his death. I like to think, though, that Tommy, who seems by all accounts extremely attentive and cared deeply about Farlap, would have noticed if the horse's feed had gone off at all. As I mentioned before, Farlap's necropsy revealed that his heart was twice the size of a normal horse, weighing in at 14 pounds. This certainly would have given him an advantage on the racetrack. I remember hearing this same thing about Secretariat, so I'm going to go on a slight tangent that covers this phenomenon. A genetic anomaly was discovered that causes this increase in heart size and has been traced through female lines back to a horse named Eclipse. Eclipse was born in 1764 in England and is only a couple of generations descended from Darley Arabian and Godolphin Arabian, two of the foundation sires of the thoroughbred breed. Eclipse, too, had a 14-pound heart that was discovered in his necropsy, just like Farlap. He had a very successful racing career in which he won every single one of his 18 races before retiring to the breeding shed. Eclipse is an ancestor to horses such as Bold Ruler, Mr. Prospector, Stormcat, Tappet, and other successful thoroughbred studs. We'll never know if Farlap would have been a good stud, partially because of his death, but also because he was gelded. I have to wonder, though, if he'd been left a stallion, if his racing career wouldn't have been quite so stressful. It seems like maybe since the only way to get money out of him was to race him, that perhaps he was pushed beyond what he could handle, which somehow led to his death. Oddly enough, I did find that some folks were questioning if the heart possessed by the museum is truly Farlap's. A filmmaker and podcaster, Carrie Nagera, had heard through the grapevine that the vet who performed Farlap's necropsy told a journalist that the heart had been cut to pieces during the necropsy, and a preserved draft horse heart was actually sent to the museum. The museum initially decided to DNA test the heart, but ultimately halted the plans. Reasons cited by the museum included that the sampling would be destructive to the heart and may prove inconclusive anyway. This is significant because the heart is extremely symbolic of Farlap, who was so well loved and iconic for the Australian people, especially during this economic depression. It became a common idiom in Australia to describe someone as having the heart of Farlap if they were really passionate and hardworking, and it was a real compliment. So having this real specimen of the heart in the museum is pretty important to the Australian people and race fans around the world alike. So this is why it seemed like something important to determine if this really was Farlap's heart. Now, does it matter if the symbology is there anyway? I don't know, but this might give us some insight as to what really happened to Farlap if we determined if this really was his heart, or if maybe the heart was also hidden with the other organs to hide some other clue that might let us know what happened to Farlap in the end. Because I've covered other cases that involve insurance fraud, I started to look into what insurance there might have been on Farlap. I found a newspaper article from November 18, 1931, shortly before Farlap disembarks for North America. It reads, quote, "Farlap already is insured for a large amount with Lloyd's, but the policy was taken out to cover the champion only while he was in Australia. Negotiations are now in progress between the agents for the owners of Farlap and Lloyd's London office for an extension of the policy to provide against the loss or injury of Farlap while he is outside Australia." End quote. I couldn't find anything after this, though, regarding a new policy, a policy update, or a payout after Farlap's death that did not occur in Australia, it occurred in North America. Now, maybe this is just a coincidence that there was a newspaper article about insurance on the horse, but it could be seen as maybe foreshadowing that something was going to happen to Farlap, or this could have just been something that people were concerned about, and that was why it was published in the newspaper. It makes me wonder if the only reason people thought that Farlap's demise could have been due to foul play was because of the attempted shooting of him years earlier. Had no one else ever tried to hurt the horse, maybe it would be more likely that this would be written up as an awful event of illness. Even after all this research, I can't decide for myself what I think happened to Farlap, but I do think that he was over-raced and over-traveled, especially in a time when travel was even more stressful than it is now, and that surely had to contribute to his death. One last interesting tidbit I'll share with you is that Farlap's American owner, David Davis, died in 1959, but in the 1990s, his family was going through some of his things that were in storage when they came across a photo album. This album had 18 pages and a total of 36 black and white photos, each with their own inscription that commemorated each of Farlap's wins. The album now resides in the National Museum of Australia. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to follow or subscribe wherever you listen and turn on notifications for future episodes. I usually try to upload on Fridays, but sometimes it just depends on how my week goes. You can also keep up with us on our other social media platforms, all at Spotted Bay Productions. I also eventually get around to posting the blog versions, including photos, of all of these episodes on spottedbay.com, but they're usually a few weeks behind when you can hear them in podcast form. It just takes me a little longer to edit them and then get them uploaded to the blog. We are now officially monetized on this podcast, so your listens really do help support this channel as it grows. While I'm certainly not getting rich off of this, it helps motivate me to write more episodes, since it is a very time-consuming process. I really do appreciate all of you listening and sharing with your friends, and we'll see you next time. What you're going to hear at the very end of this episode is the sound, and there is a video to this on YouTube, but this is Farlap's last race, the Agua Caliente Handicap in 1932.
Big race. Good and hot lead scimitar and Spanish play out onto the track. Farlap looks quite at home as he goes down to the starting gate. He's wearing the bandages on the forelegs just as he did in all his Australian races. They're off in a good line, but Farlap is cut off by the outside horses and he commences to drop back. Coming down past the stands, Cabizo is just leading and Farlap has dropped back to the rear of the field. He is out wide and keeping clear of the other horses. When they settle down, Cabizo just leads Marine, Scimitar, and Good and Hot. Farlap is still well back, with Elliot taking no chances of interference. They're going towards the turn now, out of the straight, and Cabizo is still leading, with Farlap out wide and a long way back. Elliot is set on getting a clear run, and he's doing it all right. Past the 6 furlongs, Dr. Freeland and Cabizo are together, followed by Scimitar and Good and Hot. Farlap is commencing to move up. He's running 7th now. Spanish play attempts to go with him, but is shaken off. Coming to the 5 furlongs, Farlap is going up on the outside of the field with Cabizo still leading. And as they reach the half mile, Farlap goes up to Cabizo. He's shooting by the horses now, and he takes the lead. Going along towards the home turn, Farlap is striding along with a clear lead. Cabizo is dropping out, and Ravalli Boy runs into 2nd place, followed by Scimitar. Farlap has just unwound a terrific run, but he shows no signs of weakening as he comes towards the home turn. Around the turn into the home stretch, Ravalli Boy moves up to Farlap. They're racing neck and neck now. He's got him. No, Farlap's strides are commencing to tell. He's coming away from Ravalli Boy with only a short distance to go. Elliot is riding very hard, but Farlap's got it. Come on, Farlap. Farlap, you beauty.
It's a great debut for the Australian beauty, Farlap. One of the handsomest horses ever seen on an American track. A little temperamental, but what star isn't? In one race, he's proved himself. And how the fans love it. A real champion and a new racetrack idol.